Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. It is Monday. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike Bo and Tiff here hanging out with you on a rough day if you are a Falcons fan after a tough loss. But hopefully you had a good Thanksgiving weekend overall. I know a lot of us were with our families. Some of us were not, including myself. But did you guys have a good one?
You didn't get to see your family at all? Did you get home Friday or Saturday?
Late Friday night, like way late Friday night.
Gotcha.
Thought about doing it on Wednesday, but my father's hilarious. Well, it's hilarious. He's like, we're not changing the holiday for you.
Yeah, so, that's funny.
But I'll catch up with them this week. So.
Yeah, nice. No, we went out of town, went to Memphis for 3 or 4 nights. It was good. It was good to be around family. It's one of those things where my kids are of the age where it's hard to all 4 of us sleep in the same bedroom. It's pretty difficult. So not a lot of sleep was had, but a lot of good fellowship, a lot of good food. And then ended up with a random trip to Tuscaloosa on Saturday and finished up sitting right here in the studio last night. So it was an eventful few days away from you guys for sure.
Yeah. I got a couple of days off and did see the parents. We did Amy's Thanksgiving the weekend before because of schedules. But got to see mine, got to hang out with the neighbors as always. A little golden tea was played over the holiday, but like I said, I was out and about.
What is golden tea?
So golden tea is an arcade, like when you used to have in bars and arcades, it's a golf game, and you play it.
A cue ball in the middle.
Yeah, there is. So.
Oh, okay. I know how to name.
Yeah, you can find them now, like, they build the arcade somewhat style. It's a little bit different than the one you would have played back in the day. But they sell them at places like Sam's and Costco. My neighbor bought one for his bar across the street. So we go over there and, we'll have a few drinks and play golden tee all night and basically compete in that. And it was a couple of late nights this over the holiday playing, but it's just a lot of fun. And, was out and about with New Realm, did a couple of things with them. And I got to do a show with Abe Gordon, which was a very different experience. Very different. But I enjoy Abe. He's a lot of fun. We, the Georgia Tech game, we previewed that on Friday. And that was...
Did not disappoint.
Holy smokes. That kept me up late Friday night.
When I got home Friday from... I was in Wisconsin. I had the Minnesota-Wisconsin game. It was 20 degrees. That's another story. But if you want to know about good weather gear for that kind of stuff, give me a call. Because I had some really good stuff that I was not actually that cold. But I digress. Yeah, when I touched down, I looked at my phone, saw some scores from college games, and then I still see that Georgia and Georgia Tech, it's still going on. And I was like, wait, what? Got in a car, got dropped off at home, and was able to actually finish the game. So I was shocked. 8 overtimes. It's insane.
Yeah, it was a phenomenal game. You got to give Brent Key and Georgia Tech a lot of credit. And then at the same light, give Kirby Smart and the Georgia team credit for hanging in there and making a comeback and not quitting on that game, even when it looked like it was out of reach. But Abe and I finished that show at 7:30 and kind of a preview show. That game kicked off at 7:30. I was able to make it home, eat, then go to a few minutes down the road to a buddy of mine who is staying in town and was in town from Charlotte, hang out with him for the entire second half and another, the entirety of the overtimes and hang out and watch the whole game. It was absolutely phenomenal.
It was, man. And I was sitting around family most of Friday night, and I got to tell you, between putting the kids to bed and everything else, I barely saw the end of it. I watched the end of it on my phone, sitting there in the extra bedroom at the place we were staying in Memphis, man. I was like, man, I got to see the end of this. And it was just, I was like, I don't know how many more of these overtimes I can stay awake for. I really don't. But it, to your point, I think huge credit to both sides. You could see both of them at points winning that game. Feel like it was a lost opportunity for Georgia Tech, definitely at the end. Feel bad for Hank Skeen because I think he played his heart out. But that, you know, one obvious, you know, fumble at the end of the game is going to be what overshadows it probably for him.
What do you think? Hey, what do you think about the targeting, no targeting thing on that play? That's a whole controversy. I know, and I'm not.
I'm just not that guy. I try not to ever get on this microphone and talk about penalties, would be penalties, even the Falcons games. You talk about, you know, after the Chiefs game and everything else. I'm just I don't like to be a penalty vulture, and I get it. You know, if you're upset about it, I kind of understand. But I'm just I don't know. I can't ever stomach that from any angle. If it's good or bad for my team or whoever I'm cheering for or whatever, I'm just like, yeah, it is what it is.
Here's the problem for me is I don't advocate for them either. I don't advocate for targeting in this situation. The reality is you could call it on almost any tackle. It feels like because there's so many layers to what targeting is. Technically, leading with the crown of the helmet is targeting, which he did. Reality is it was a hell of a football play, and 5 years ago, nobody gives a crap.
No,
about
I'm
it.
With you. And that's why it's hard for me. That's why I don't want to be a penalty vulture, because I'm like, dude, I would have done all the same things he did, and it's one of the greatest plays in the history of that rivalry. And I don't want to take that away from that kid on that other side. So it is what it is.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, on to Sunday and what went down for the Atlanta Falcons at home against the Chargers. They dropped their third straight game. So this one, obviously, coming out of the bye week, and they lose to the Chargers 17-13 in a game where Kirk Cousins, we saw him have no touchdown passes, 4 interceptions on the afternoon. So a tough outing for him and the entire team.
I think he outplayed Los Angeles yesterday in most facets of the game, except for one. And that
tough
was
outing meaning the loss.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not disputing that. I think you got the effort you wanted. If you're a Falcons fan right now, you're sitting there saying, "We did it. We got the effort that we needed out of a bye week." You got blitzed the last week before the bye by Denver on the road, and you needed to see the team respond. I thought they did. You miss a kick early, which ends up being big late. That didn't cost you the game, though. The reality of the situation is you've been brutal in the red zone for 3 straight weeks now, and that continued. That was obviously another factor in it yesterday, but you can't turn the ball over 4 times, and you can't have the highest paid player, the leader of the team, the guy that was supposed to be the difference in putting you in the playoffs this year, turn the ball over in crucial situations, including the pick in the red zone, which was just unacceptable.
Yeah, it definitely was. And look, man, we got 3 hours, so I'm going to try not to get too worked up here in the first segment. But just as frustrating as it gets, because to your point, you felt like watching the game yesterday, there was one issue. And that's what it felt like watching the game. And there's never just one issue. It's always multiple things. There's always a bunch of guys that could have done their job a lot better. But when you look at everything you knew you'd struggle with, they have elite pass rushers. They have the number one scoring defense in the NFL. They have a lot of good things going for them. Number 5 in red zone percentage defensively.
Yeah.
You knew that it was going to be tough. Only 5 turnovers on the season for them, and you get one on their first drive. And so you're like, dude, all this stuff is off to a good start. You score in your first red zone opportunity, and then it just completely falls off the rails. And it's not only the 4 interceptions, it's the fact that it could have probably been 6 when you go back and look at the film. Completely uneasy in the pocket was Kirk Cousins, not making good decisions, getting antsy, kind of throwing the ball up for grabs, all the above. It was frustrating to watch. There is no doubt about it.
Defensively, and I don't know if you just mentioned it, but the 5 sacks they were able to get to Justin Herbert in this, we were coming in with, a season low?
Yeah, they had 9, I think.
9 or 10 coming into this game. So at least you saw some things happen there.
Well,
in the pass rush game.
And I think a guy that's I've heard writers and fans and hosts and everything just crush is Arnold Ebiketie, and he played his butt off yesterday. The guy only got 19 snaps. In those 19 snaps, he got 2 sacks, 3 tackles, a tackle for loss, and another quarterback hit registered. He was all over the place. He played well against, I think, a good offensive line.
Oh, they're definitely they're a good group. I think everybody, you know, if you go if you're one of the people that goes by grades, they're all in the top 20. The both tackles have been very, very good. To your point, Joe Ald has played at a Pro Bowl level as a rookie, and he's top 10, top 15 pick. So they've done a good job. And when you kind of look at what they've been offensively, Arnold Ebukadi was wreaking havoc. I thought Grady Jarrett had his best game of the year. I thought David Onyemata might have his best game of the year yesterday. Just a number of guys that were all over the place creating havoc up front, which was beautiful to see. And, you know, to your point, you only had 10 going into the game. You got 5 yesterday. No matter how you slice it, it was a good day for the defense.
More on the Falcons on the other side. Also, we'll have more reaction on the Georgia Tech battle that went down 8 overtime. Stay with us here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, I thought they made a couple nice plays, but obviously also feel like we made it a lot easier on them. And when I say we, I mean I got to play better. Kind of goes without saying, but was disappointed in the game I put together, and you know, it hurts right now.
That was Atlanta Falcons quarterback Kirk Cousins with our Dave Archer post game, and what he was talking about the play better part were the 4 interceptions. But overall, in his day, he had 24. He was 24 of 39 for 245 yards. But again, him taking ownership there of the way he played, at least with the four picks.
I've tried to make heads or tails about it since the end of the game yesterday, and getting on the post game and kind of talking it through, and I come up with a couple of different things. First of all, I think that you incorporated a little play action. You wanted to incorporate play action. We talked about it last week about, you know, you wanted to see more play action. He's been good on play action. And the second play action in the game, he turns around and throws a pick. So, what he was seeing got changed up. But also, it also looked to me, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, it looked to me like Kirk Cousins probably in the bye week watched the film and was like, I got to get the ball out quick. You know what I mean? Like, I guys are getting home. If I'm double clutching and going to my fourth and fifth read, I've got to get the ball out. And numerous times did he get the ball out and feel completely or look completely uncomfortable with where he was delivering the ball. And so I think that was in the back of his head as well. But I didn't think the pass pro was bad. I didn't think the run game was bad. It just all kind of came down on him, and he did not play well.
Yeah, they were terrible on third down. They were a 3 of 14 on third down. Just brutal. 21% doesn't cut it. Yet again, though, you dominated time of possession. You had 35 minutes of time of possession. They only had 42 yards in the second half, as in the Chargers. And you couldn't score. You couldn't score touchdowns. I think he got the ball out quick at times, but he forced it. I mean, that first interception was, they looked like they were in some kind of zone, and because of the routes ran, the DB didn't have to drop, and he just stepped up and took it. And I think it was I got to get his name. It was Still. Tarheeb Still had 2 picks, including a pick six.
Pick six. I was going to ask your thoughts on the pick six and what you saw there.
Well, that was that fourth down play, and I don't know what Kirk saw, because first off, that ball's got to be to the outside, if I'm not mistaken. It looked like it was a little inside, and I don't know what he saw, because the corner never dropped.
Right.
He jumped the route, because he never had to, nothing took him away.
It felt like that possibly there was some kind of miscommunication between him and the wide receivers. And I don't know whose fault that is, but it was like no way that he thought, oh, I'm going to get this out to, who was it, Mooney that was over there? There's no way he thought, I'm going to get this out to Mooney and this is going to be a good throw. Like, there was something completely off about that play. And like I said, he threw 4 interceptions. It could have been 6. You look at the play, and I think Arch mentioned it on the broadcast as well. You mentioned the play where they blitz 7, and he throws almost right into the middle of the triangle in the middle of the field to Ray into, like, triple coverage.
Yeah.
And it was like he knew he had to get the ball out, and he had to get it now. And Derwin James was upset because the ball got tipped at the line of scrimmage. He would probably have taken that one the other way as well. And so it just – he wasn't seeing it well, and the Chargers, you got to give their, you know, tip your hat to them, because they were making it difficult on him in terms of what he was seeing.
Now, you go back to the first drive. Go back to that first drive and that throw to Mooney. He's got Mooney wide open in the middle field. It's a touchdown. I mean, I think Mooney would have walked in and maybe got hit at the goal line, but that's a touchdown, and he threw it poorly. Every throw I felt like he made to Darnell Mooney was off yesterday. Bad. It was short. I mean, the fourth down catch, I think on the same drive that – no, it wasn't the same drive as the pick, as a pick six, but it maybe it was. I can't remember. But the ball's low. And Mooney has to make great catch.
That was bad.
Clutch it, regather himself, and step forward for another couple yards to make sure that he had the first down. It just, you know.
I think they ruled that an incompletion, if I'm not mistaken. I think they came back and ruled it an incompletion. If we're talking about the same one, the one that was over the middle near the goal line?
No, that's the one that's that first throw that he made. That was I'm talking about the one over the sideline that he ends up making. But that one, and looked like Kurt didn't even step into the throw on that one across the middle at the goal line.
Man, that was bad, dude. That was
awful. Don't know. I just don't know what it just. Tiff, he felt uncomfortable. He looked uncomfortable. It just looked out of sorts. You know, it kind of looked like the first week.
It really did in terms of his uncomfortability. And I don't think there was. They were rushing the passer, but it wasn't near anything what T.J. Watt was doing to you.
I was going to ask. Mike, when you're coming out of a bye week and you feel like you corrected some things after losing the two previous games before, and then here you are on a Monday after another loss, what does that do to a team?
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever seen a bye week affect a player the way it seemingly did Kirk Cousins. And that's weird to say because it's not like he was on fire the couple of weeks before the bye week. As a matter of fact, this offense has been horrid, been way worse than they were yesterday. I thought Zach Robinson did a nice job earlier in the game. Bo and I, watching a little bit of tape this morning, noticed a couple of different run schemes. They just simply haven't run. A draw action in the backfield. They ran a wham play that I don't think they've run the entire season. They ran that yesterday. But when you look at Kirk coming off the bye, it was like very clear that one of the game plans was, hey, the pass rush is getting home. If I wait too long, I'm not mobile enough. I got to get the ball out. I got to make quick decisions. And yesterday, many times did you see him go, I got to make quick decision, and the ball would either hit the ground or be one of the opposing team's players. So I don't know that I've ever seen a player come off a bye week the way Kirk Cousins did yesterday.
Well, I want to give Zach Robinson credit, too, on one thing, is that this is a team that wants to rush for and have two high safeties, on, especially on first down, and kind of play like an umbrella coverage. You heard Arch talk about it a lot yesterday. And they said, okay, well, we're going to run the ball on you then. And they did. I mean, they ran the ball 3 to 4 yards a clip all day long. It was just when there was a couple of bad play calls where these jet sweeps on third and one, just go forward. And don't ask Ray McLeod to block Derwin James either. Because that's, and I know that you don't always know who's going to line up there, but you got to kind of, somebody, maybe Kirk's got to notice that and be like, "Hey, this isn't good."
Yeah, on the speed sweep to Drake Lennon, just frustrating because you're watching. First of all, I don't believe in Drake Lennon as a handoff kind of guy. It just, you know, I'm like, that's probably not going to be what his forte is. But
a big guy get a yard, I get that, but not with that scheme.
Not with Derwin James screaming off the right side and Ray McLeod is, I don't know, 3 or 4 yards separated from the end of the tackle. You run a speed sweep to a nub, you better make sure there's no blitzer coming off that edge. And if there is, you got to get out of it, to your point. So there's got to be things built in to be able to say, nah, this is not a good idea, and that's just not what you got. No, you just had, to your point, a couple of negative plays where it just seemed like once they got into the second and 10, second and nine range, then you couldn't run the ball and you couldn't stay on schedule. And then Lord knows you don't want to get in third and short because our third down percentage is bad just based off that almost alone.
Defensively, though, and we kind of touched on this before, you did see a lot of, I guess, improvement, especially in the sack department with 5 against a guy like Justin Herbert when you're coming into this game with the season, what, of 10 for this season?
Yeah, somewhere around the 9 to 10 department. I thought Arnold Abakady was just played out of his mind. I thought he was played phenomenal. I thought Caden Ellis might have played one of his best games. He fights through a double team for the first sack of the game. And Lorenzo Carter had a punch out, basically, went in there and knocked that ball out. I thought the defense played pretty good. The secondary had their best game in quite some time. And really, what you let Ladd McConkey kind of get off in the first half, and then he was non-existent in the second half. Yeah. Part of that is, you know, you made him feel the wrath of catching some of those balls across the middle and banged him up a little bit. But
he was dealing with a shoulder injury pretty much the majority of the game, something with the upper body or arm.
Yeah, it was his shoulder. Yeah. I think, Tiff, from what some of the reports we got from the L.A. people was that it's something that has been bothering him all year. Then he ends up leaving with a knee as well. So he was all sorts of the Georgia product from Chatsworth, Georgia, kind of got banged up. But you look at you look at the secondary, and one of the things I thought they did a really good job of was tackling. This was one of the guys didn't break tackles yesterday against you the way they did the last couple weeks.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. And I don't know that there's a position on defense that I did not think played well. I also saw Justin Simmons show up in a couple of ways that I haven't seen him show up in a few weeks. And so that was nice to see. You look all the way across the board and you go all the way down the stat list. I said it, you know, leading the show. I thought Grady Jarrett had his best game. I thought Grady Jarrett looked like he had been refreshed, obviously rehabbing all throughout the offseason and through training camp, and then comes and plays all those games in a row. It was almost like it was the first chance he had had in a long time to sort of rest his legs when they were getting back to full strength, because I saw the explosion we have not seen in Grady in quite some time. Same for David Onyemata. I thought he played his best game. Lorenzo Carter stepping back into this role. Troy Anderson switching out with Nate Landman in certain situations. Top to bottom, I thought they played well. Clark Phillips played very, very well as well. But you do miss Mike Hughes. But I thought it top to bottom. There's nothing about the defense that I can pick out and be like, man, wish they'd done that better. Like, you pretty much had a complete game defensively, and I know it's got to be frustrating for that group.
Yeah, it was kind of, again, I don't – missed opportunities. You also cleaned up penalties. I heard you and Chris talking about this on postgame when I was driving home after I'd left the locker room. And you cleaned up on those penalties that had put you behind the eight ball, especially in the red zone. That didn't happen yesterday. But what you did still do was you turned the ball over, you missed a kick that ended up being huge. I know Youngway is dealing with a hip flexor so much to the point that they signed Riley Patterson as a kicker, but he was inactive because Youngway went, and Youngway kind of looked like it corrected it after that first miss. But that first miss was so big because this is a team that didn't. This team had given up, I think, something like four. At one point, they were averaging. They'd given up 49 points in the first half all season until they played the Ravens, and they gave up 14 there. You had a chance to put 10 on the board early. That would have been huge because now when you go for it on fourth down and Kirk throws a unacceptable interception, you could have kicked that field goal. It would have been a one-point game. Now it changes everything at the end. So you just, again, you missed opportunities you couldn't afford to miss.
Georgia and Georgia Tech traded blow for blow in a matchup for the ages. But what had Kirby Smart surprised in this one? We'll hear from him next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, and there are lots of showdowns that went down over a rivalry weekend this past weekend in the college football world. And to kick things off, it was Georgia and Georgia Tech on a Friday night in an 8-overtime matchup that went down as the Dogs took it 44-42.
Yeah, the one game that didn't end up in a fist fight after
it. Really? Seriously.
I mean, what a debacle that
weekend. They didn't have the energy to.
Yeah,
they were going to.
Yeah, they played their butts off. That was, you know, I don't know. That was one of those games, and it's so rare that you really can say it, but it's one of those games where you just felt bad for whoever was going to end up on the short end of the stick losing because Georgia, I give a lot of credit for being resilient. They took everything that Georgia Tech had, and they still were able to find a way to win at the end. Like, there's been a lot of talk about the referees in the game. I thought there was missed calls on both sides. And at the end of the day, you can't cry wolf or cry foul when both sides got away with stuff. I thought Brent Key had his guys ready to go. And I think a lot of people on Georgia's side walked away with like, oh, man, those guys have found them a football coach, and we're, you know, it's not going to be as easy as it's been in the past.
Yeah, I love the shout out to our friend Maria Martin. I think she had the shot standing there next to Brent Key on the field as he's looking up at the scoreboard, and he stands there for, you know, over a minute and just kind of peering at it. I thought that was cool. And I'm with you. I think even the most negative fans on either side have to come away saying, really proud of the way my team played in a rivalry game with all the emotions on the line on the Friday night with the world watching. Both sides, man, really doing a nice job laying it on the line. I thought there was just so many clutch plays both ways, and both teams had ample opportunity to go win it. And in the end, it was Georgia after 8 overtimes, which is just – I don't know how I feel about this this overtime format, but, man, it was a lot of fun to watch on Friday night. There's no doubt.
So was the quarterback play in this one. When you're looking at Haynes King, he was 26-36, just over 300 yards and 2 touchdown passes. Kirby Smart, though, a little bit surprised by King's play, given that he's been dealing with a shoulder injury.
What threw it off a little bit was Haynes King's ability to throw the ball, because everything we'd been told is his injury prevented him from throwing it. And you look at the previous two games, and he really didn't. And, you know, there was points in time at NC State that it was a tight ball game. If they were going to throw it, you would throw it with the guy, right? Well, they trusted it with Philo. So that was, you know, our expectation was if they were going to throw it with Philo, and then they were going to do the other things. But Haynes came in and –
I agree with Kirby. Oof. Well, there was a report out that came out, and when Abe and I were doing the show, and it came up before it, but on Friday, that they weren't going to use Philo at all, and that Pyron was going to be the backup, and that Philo would, because they didn't want to burn his red shirt because he's played in four.
Sure.
The next time he plays, he burns it. I thought he'd already burned it. We were like, yeah, that's not, I mean, come on. You're trying to win the game. You pull out all the stops. If you need Philo, you need it. Because no one thought Haynes King could go downfield anymore.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because of the injury.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought it was a good game plan all the way around. I thought that Buster Faulkner throughout most of the game was just insane. I mean, you go all the way down. That play where Haynes King fumbles, you get that yard, the game's over. And it has to sting for him, because I thought he played as gritty and has played all year as gritty as you could possibly ask him to play, and has been a catalyst for a lot of this team's success. And yet you hate the thought of that one play kind of falling on his shoulders, but that's exactly what happened in the end. And like we said earlier, credit to Georgia's defense for making that play.
A lot of shakeups went down this weekend, and I'll just highlight this one because you had the number two team in the college football playoff rankings and then top team in the AP poll, amongst the top two in the AP poll at number two, which was Ohio State. They lost to Michigan 13-10.
Unbelievable.
It's a brutal loss.
That's one of the most unbelievable losses in recent history that I can remember. We said it going into rivalry week. Teams will fall. It happens every single year. But I would say of all the matchups that would have been top 25 or even top 50 rivalry teams, this was the one I least expected. Four touchdown favorites. Ohio State, Michigan down bad, with all the things they've gone through this year.
Well, they can't throw the football.
I mean, that is as unlikely of a win. And I was actually talking to Joe Patrick in the booth yesterday at the game. He's like, Ryan Day needs to win the national title.
I've said that. Yeah, we talked about it Friday.
We talked about it on Thursday, too, because I figured that this would be a tough one to come back from, given you've only beaten Michigan one time in your tenure there. And then you had the COVID year as well, but it's not good. And so they took a tumble majorly in the AP poll, the latest edition of it that came out. They're now sitting. They went from two, and now they have dropped to seven.
Maybe they should have dropped more. Not only do you lose the game, but then there's a complete melee in the middle of the field, and Ryan Day is on camera completely away from it all going, What happened? And like, so what are you doing?
Yeah.
I don't think Sharon, I think Sharon Moore necessarily handled himself well either. He was screaming at fans at one point.
True, he was pulling players off the field.
Yeah.
But
pepper spray comes out. What are the ramifications of that?
I don't know. I saw the Herb Street tweet, and I think a lot of people have kind of jumped on with that he's like, college football owes it to its own sport to look into this and whoever was an antagonist over some of these situations. Because, and I tweeted out, you said earlier, it's like Georgia and Georgia Tech looked friendly after the weekend because of, you know, the fact that their coaches embrace it at midfield and they're like hugging, and it's like these somber moments, and it was everything great. Watching that Friday night was everything great about college football that still exists. And then watching this all day Saturday, I get it. I'm going to do a flag planting thing coming up at 7:40 and mic'd up, but it just was frustrating to watch, man. Just a lot of bad judgment on the part of a lot of players and coaches and even administrators in some circumstances.
Auburn, Alabama, Roll Tide, 28-14.
Yeah, I ended up in the building for this one. I have to tell that story later. My kids, we did not know we were going until late Friday night. Took my kids to this game, ended up with some really good seats, and my kids were both asleep within 10 minutes of getting inside of Bryant-Denny Stadium. I was like, well, at least you're at the Iron Bowl, kid, because you don't even know what's going on right now. But it was good to see. Bama, they're a very, very flawed football team. Very, very flawed. There's a chance that that might have been the last time over the weekend that you see Jalen Milroe in a Bama uniform. I don't know what the future holds for him. I don't know what the future holds for this team. But man, they're tough to watch. And I know that Auburn fans feel the same way about their own squad. So it was just, it was an ugly game in a lot of different ways.
Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Tennessee takes it 36-23. You had South Carolina knocking off Clemson 17-14, and Syracuse knocking off Miami 42-38.
Yeah, bye Miami. Bye.
And of course, Texas and Texas A&M meeting for the first time in what I think 13 years since A&M left to go to the SEC. Texas in their inaugural year in the SEC, and they win that meeting 17-7. That was Saturday night's game.
Texas sealed themselves into the college football playoff and the SEC championship game with that win. Miami, to me, has played their way out of the college football playoff. I'm sorry, but you can't, that schedule and how you struggled, you know, I just don't – to me, they don't deserve to play in the college football playoff.
A real quick, huge shout-out to Shane Beamer and what he's been able to do at South Carolina. It seemed like the wheels were falling off that team earlier in the year with the losses to LSU, and, boy, they have got it pointed in a good direction. They are playing as good as anybody in the country right now.
Yeah, there are people writing his obituary as far as being fired, and now he's going to get a nice little extension probably.
And deserves it.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Well, stay with us at the top of the hour. We've got the Falcons QB, Kirk Cousins, joining Dave Archer. You're going to want to take a listen to this interview when we come back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Yeah, that's just the bottom line. You know, nothing else to say. We turned the football too many times. That can't happen. And the only way you get that is you can negate it and get your own turnovers, and we got to get more. And we got to go out there and we got to play, you know, protect the football and do better, make better decisions with it.
That was Atlanta Falcons head coach Raheem Morris following the team's 17-13 loss at home yesterday to the Los Angeles Chargers.
Sure, yeah. No, he was spot on with a lot of things he said afterwards. And I know that he is a big believer in Kirk Cousins and will continue to be. But I know that's a conversation a lot of Falcons fans are probably having today.
Well, I keep thinking back about the things that went right yesterday, and you create a turnover. First time your defense is on the field, you knock the ball out, you strip it, you end up converting into a touchdown. Second time this year at home, your defense has stood up and not allowed an offensive touchdown, and you're 0-2 in those games. And that is remarkable. And then you look on the other side, and there's games where you've given up 30 points. And won at home. And it's because your offense was there. So it's very head-scratching because your defense has been brutal down for a stretch, and your offense has now matched them in being brutal.
You kind of had different expectations coming out of the bye week. Like, you kind of thought this team was going to look different, and that's not what happened, at least offensively.
I was excited about what the game plan was, at least till the second half. I thought that Zach Robinson very clearly in the first quarter went in with a different game plan than he had in previous weeks. There was play action. There was a quarterback sneak. There was draw action in the backfield. We talked about earlier, they ran a wham play in the first half that we have not seen pretty much all season. There was an ability for this offense to keep the defense off balance, and I thought that's why you saw them. They marched down the field and missed the field goal. And then they go right back after the turnover and go back and get a touchdown. And I thought, man, we were off to the races right now. Like, this is exactly what you do in a bye week. This is exactly how you want to see it drawn up from Zach Robinson. This is exactly the imagination and the ingenuity that you want out of this offense. And then, for whatever reason, it's like the further we got into the game, the further we got in the second half, continue to do some of the same things that we were before the bye week. We started running wide zone every run play, which some good, some bad. We were still running it efficiently. It is what it is. And then you go back to straight dropbacks from Kirk Cousins because he throws an interception on a play action pass. So it was a number of things that went wrong. It's not like you can put your finger on one thing, but you definitely have to check Kirk Cousins' stat column when you come away from the game.
Speaking of Kirk Cousins, he joined Dave Archer. This interview is brought to you by Margaritaville at Lanier Islands, an easy 1 hour drive from Atlanta.
Kirk, coming in, knew these guys were pretty salty defensively. What made them so tough and tough to kind of figure out throwing the ball?
Yeah, I thought they made a couple nice plays, but obviously also feel like we made it a lot easier on them. And when I say we, I mean I got to play better. kind of goes without saying, but was disappointed in the game I put together, and you know, it hurts right now.
Yeah, you got some guys that stepped up around you. Ray made a couple really big grab for you. Tell me about those guys. I know you had a lot of confidence those guys distributing the football.
Yeah, Ray is a great player, and he continues to show up when we give him opportunities, and you know, love the difference he's made for our offense. Bijan as well. You know, Mooney and Drake did a great job today competing. I felt bad. I got to give him a few more opportunities. I think Mooney, you know, there's some that we left out there. No fault of his, just, you know, giving him more opportunities so he can help us.
I know you're trying to get ready for your next offensive series. Pretty good effort by your defense today. Yeah. 189 yards of total offense, five sacks.
Yeah, the defense was outstanding, and that's partly why it does hurt so much, as you feel like they played winning football, and they gave our offense every chance to keep getting the ball back. And so, proud of the way they played, but disappointed we couldn't help them more.
No question, you're maybe the leader on this football team. Tell me about what the mindset has to be. I know you got to flush it, but you got to be a team concept as you get ready to go play Minnesota.
Yeah, pro football, you have to, good or bad, you have to, you know, walk away and be able to get back on the horse and get ready the next week and treat them all as, you know, standalone events. You know, and certainly we got a challenging opponent and a challenging place up ahead. And I got to dig deep and play our best football, you know, in the last five games.
As always, thanks for your time, buddy.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate you, man.
Yep.
Just a tough loss. And as Dave, who former Falcons QB and analyst for Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, had just pointed out, they're going to face now a tough Minnesota team. And that's not going to be easy coming off a loss like this.
You love the messaging, too, from Kirk Cousins, because you believe everything he's saying, right? And that's what stinks about the entire thing, is you know it matters to him. There are guys, and we've all seen them, and there's been guys that have played for the Falcons, even some currently, where you look at it and go, you know, I really don't think it matters to him. You can tell from listening to Kirk that this, like, what a tough interview to have to give. And I think that's why you hear some of the teammates. I mean, everybody's seen the cut from Drake London yesterday where he's asked about, you know, his confidence in Kirk Cousins, and his word was unwavering. Unwavering. He said he's the best leader, he's the best teammate. We have full confidence in him. And I think the reason that his teammates react like that is because of, you can just hear that somber nation, that somber notion in his voice that, like, I just did not do enough today and I didn't play well enough.
Yeah, I walked in. We went to dinner last night to Cancun's afterwards, and I walk in and I see some people there that I know. First thing, so what likelihood we see Penix play? And it's like doubtful.
I've already seen headlines, and I wasn't going to be the one to bring it up on the show. So
I think, well, look, I mean, I don't. I think all of us understand that Kirk, you know, just financially and as far as being a leader in the locker room. But I don't fault anybody for asking the question.
No,
I don't think you can.
It's not, and that's not, and that wasn't what I was, you know, what my point was. The point is that that's the thing that I know. I said as soon as you saw the draft pick come in, you do realize if he ever has a game where he throws more than two picks, I guess it turns out four. And they don't win, and they don't win because of that. This is the what's going to start, and that's the situation you put yourself in. I don't think that there is any thought process up 985, I guess I should say, of benching Kirk Cousins when you're about to go to Minnesota to play one of the most blitz happy defenses in the NFL. On the road in one of the tougher environments to play in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think, look, the comments have come out from Derwin James after the game yesterday. Derwin James says, hey, we did a great job of giving Kirk Cousins different looks, disguising things, making him uncomfortable, making him uncertain. I can only imagine if he's doing that to Kirk Cousins, what a rookie quarterback feels like in that situation. Now, look, I think there's a lot of upside to Penix. I think you can probably do some different things with him offensively. You can move him around. You can hold the backside of defenses on some of your wide zones the way Kirk Cousins cannot do in the bootlegs. So there is upside. I don't fault anybody for asking the question. I just, if you were going to make a move, to your point, this ain't the week. Like, that's not where you want to send him. That's not where you want to send a rookie quarterback for their first start. I think Kirk Cousins gets every opportunity to make this work throughout the end of this season.
Now, what happened? Now, I think it could be a different conversation if you get into the, you get to halftime, you're down by 3 points or something like that, and Cousins has turned the ball over more than two times. I think that could be a different
this
conversation.
Season, I mean, you're talking about this weekend.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think that could be a different conversation because I think at that point, sometimes a break is good for a guy. And sometimes, you know, look, man, we gotta go to this. And look, the last thing you want is doing anything like that. The reality is you improved in almost every facet of the game but one, and ended up, that cost you the game. It's just, we talked about this 2 weeks, I think maybe 2 weeks ago. You got to get one of these games against Minnesota or the Chargers or Washington.
Yeah. Got to get one of them.
You just got to get one. You almost got great help from Carolina. Bryce Young did everything he could, and Baker Mayfield did everything he could to lose the game at times, because at times he didn't make some good decisions. Yeah. And Bryce Young's growing up in front of her. That's the other thing. That's the scary part. Bryce Young is growing up in front of our eyes. Carolina ain't going to be a given in week 18.
No.
And they're not going to be a given next year. They might be a factor. In fact, you might go back and look at it that next year, Carolina might be the third team in the division that you think is the tough out, and New Orleans might be the fourth.
Yeah, it was. I'll say this: you're watching Kirk Cousins struggle yesterday, and then Goforth and I getting here, and we're doing the post game show. We're talking about the struggles of Kirk Cousins, and I look up, and Baker Mayfield at one point to start that game is like 2 of 9. And you think Dave Canales knows what Baker does well and what he doesn't? Because Baker, I think when he was playing here, started like 12 of 13. So Dave Canales, nice job yesterday in getting Bryce Young ready to roll, and that offense kind of starting to get back on track. And so you're right, man. That's, you look at the schedule, you look at the quarterback play and everything else that's going to come in this final month. You fell apart last year in December. Can't happen again. Can't happen again.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. Is Saquon Barkley the league's MVP? He sure is playing like it. We'll go in the huddle when we come back and give you the NFL headlines next on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, getting you set for the Hawks and the Pelicans in the NBA knockout round tonight as they try to fight for their seat to get the NBA Cup. Tip. Pre-tip starts right here on 92.9 The Game at 7 o'clock for your pregame stuff. And then 7:30 is tip.
Yeah, not quite an NBA Cup game tonight, Tiff. Knockout round starts next week. But they did win their group stage over last week when we weren't all together, able to knock off three straight. You lost three games.
Cavaliers.
Yeah, you lost three games against Golden State, Chicago, and Dallas. And you're just feeling bad about yourself. And we mentioned Luka didn't play for Dallas. And you're losing all these games. And then In the craziest of Hawks ways, you're able to put together one of your more complete performances last week. Actually, two of your more complete performances last week in back-to-back games against Cleveland. You pull out both of those games. And then a scare against Charlotte over the weekend, but you pull that one out as well. And now you're you're staring at that that NBA Cup. The NBA Cup, to me, is like that really just that tweet that somebody puts out that you're just like, yeah, dude, everybody knows that. And they're getting the engagement they want to out of the tweet. There's just a lot of people going, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, that's the NBA Cup to me. Like, it's normal basketball games. And you're like, yeah, it's a basketball game. And at the same time, they're getting engagement off the NBA Cup. So hats off to them. And I guess with the Hawks being one of the final eight teams, we'll all be paying attention to it. But I think knockout stages start next Tuesday. So be locked in for that. But, yeah, the Hawks tonight against the Pelicans. See if they can keep the heater going.
Let's go in the huddle. We start in the NFC South because you had the Panthers and the Buccaneers going at it. That game went into overtime as the Bucs take it 26-23. But Bryce Young is looking pretty good. Like, things have turned around for him as a starting quarterback of the Carolina Panthers.
Definitely. He's made some strides. He's doing a nice job kind of stepping up in the pocket. He's actually, I don't know if you guys remember watching him last year. There were very, very few throws across the middle. And it seems like whatever they've been able to find with him and Dave Canales, over the last few weeks, it's he's throwing across the middle. He's stepping up. He looks as confident as he could possibly look and just getting the ball down the field.
Adam Thielen's been back. So this is his second game back. So that's been huge for them. He had been dealing with a hamstring injury. As Young threw for almost 300 yards, 298, a touchdown pass. He was 26 of 46.
Adam Thielen made one of the best catches I've seen all year. One-handed snag, ball away from him. He's falling one way and is able to reach out with his, I believe it was his left hand, and snag it. I don't know what else to tell you. I think you just nailed it. I saw Bryce Young, and when we played them up there, Bryce Young came by Arch and I, and Arch spoke with him, and we stood there for a minute with him, and he didn't look broken or anything like that, but he looked like, just the look on his face was like he wasn't content with his role. And I'm not saying anything bad, but it was just like, you know, they wanted more. The Bryce Young I saw yesterday on the field and off the, and standing over on the sideline, looked like a completely different person. He's your point to the confidence. He looked like he was kind of like he looked like he was a leader and a veteran at that moment. And it just I said it. I said it. Maybe it was you. I texted Mike. I said Bryce Young's growing up in front of our eyes, and it's as a Panther hater, it's kind of cool to see because he's been hated on a lot, and some of it maybe a little bit too quick and a little bit unfairly.
And I reached out to a Panther source last week ahead of games, and they were talking about the message to Bryce was just don't put us in bad situations. And also just looking at his demeanor and body language, they too noted how much he has grown.
Isn't it just there's a point in every young quarterback's career, I think, especially when they've been struggling the way that Bryce Young has and the situation he's been, where all of a sudden the light bulb comes on and it goes, yeah, I can do this. Like, it just seems like the last couple weeks, it's like, yeah, I can do this. This isn't too big for me. I'm not out of pocket or out of my comfort zone. This is fine. I'm playing quarterback.
That was the biggest thing for me is I, you know, you talk to guys. I think it was Dave Pasch is before the draft, before he was ever drafted. It was during the NFL season because Pasch is not only a ESPN play-by-play guy, but he's also one of the NFL. And he said he was like, man, he's so smart football-wise. Like, you have no clue. He is just on top of everything. And you saw him play in the NFL, and I was like, well, he's not making smart plays. Where's the smart guy at? I know that he's in there. And whatever has happened, he feels comfortable where he's thinking, right? And he's processing things. And that smart, that football IQ is now being seen on the field, and he's making plays because of it. That play where he stepped up and made the touchdown throw to Thielen, I mean, that's a guy that just kind of feels comfortable where he's at on the field, understands where his receiver's going to be, what the coverage is doing, and makes a play.
Let's stick in the NFC South and talk about the Saints. They dropped their game 21-14 to the LA Rams.
Yeah, the once hot
Saints. The once hot, yeah.
The interim coach bounce is now gone because they look pretty putrid yesterday on offense.
Putrid.
Yeah. No, it's okay. Taysom Hill, unfortunately, leaves the game, has to be carted off. I hate to see that. I know that he's a Falcons killer, but to me, he plays the game the right way. So it stinks for them. That continues to be a little bit of a throwaway year down in New Orleans, which I don't think anybody up here is shedding tears over.
Man, how good does Saquon Barkley look for the Eagles? 24-19, they won against the Baltimore Ravens. Some people calling this a preview of the Super Bowl, what could be the matchup. But he looked downright like he was the MVP and was even in Baltimore getting some MVP chance.
Yeah, he continues to be good. I would push, and I know it's not your words, I know it's what a lot of people are saying. I would push back on that because I don't think you can forget the fact that Kansas City's 11-1 and Buffalo is now. Buffalo clinched their division last night.
But some were, you know.
Yeah. I don't think this Baltimore team is near as good as it was last year. I think a lot of it is on defense as well. And they needed their offense didn't play up to its capability yesterday.
Yeah.
But Saquon stepping up when they absolutely needed him to help try to put this game on ice. He had over 100 yards. And one touchdown on 23 rushing attempts, including some one of those runs. I mean, he just looks ridiculous out there. And then you also had Derrick Henry on the other side. These were two guys that had met in the offseason at one point about the, what was it, a running back meeting? Or was that even the year before? It was a meeting of like
The year before, Austin Eckler and all those guys. Yeah.
Devaluing the running back.
I was just about to say, Tiff, with all apologies to Bijan and Josh Jacobs, this is the best two running backs in the NFL going at it in this game. And it was fun to watch. And both of them struggled kind of out the gate. Numbers not normally where you'd want to see them. But Saquon ended up with the 107, like you said. I got another name for you. You talk about don't forget about Kansas City. How about Buffalo last night and Josh Allen and all the things he continues to do? Only throws 13 completions, but man, he is such a gritty player, and he deserves a lot of that recognition as well. And I hate it to be the good quarterback on a good team, but he just seems like he's not getting the love that he needs for a 10-2 Bills team that was absolutely dominant last night.
Well, let's move on to that Sunday night football game in the snowpocalypse. It was 35-10. The Bills take it over the 49ers. And yes, Josh Allen is able to do everything for that team. You watch that great play with the receiver Amari Cooper getting the pass and then having the wherewithal to a lateral it back to Josh Allen, who then's diving in for the Superman score that you've seen him do so many times before, but he always seems to put the team on his back.
Do we know if they're building a new – are they already okay to build a new stadium up there, or is that something that's still working on?
They're they've already started construction
it
on
just,
it.
Same area, too. It's going to be up there in Orchard Park. Orchard
yeah,
Park.
I had them week one. And so it's just basically right across the – right across the way.
The videos of the fans shoveling, it's always endearing, but at the same time, I'm like, are we going to do this every single time it snows in Buffalo for just the rest of time? I mean, it's just, I'm like, can we not get some kind of system that, you know, I don't know, warms up the yard lines and some of the seats? Like, sheesh.
I'm sure they will. We know Green Bay has the system underneath the field. I'm sure they will. I agree with the Josh Allen stuff. Remember when their window was closed because they had released players and including Diggs and, you know, could Josh Allen make a bunch of just air quote what they called guys at the time, and they've replaced them and they got Amari Cooper now. Like they're
being up there week one, good. You could sense the, and this is no shot at Diggs or anything like that, but you could just sense kind of like the weight maybe being lifted. There wasn't probably as much pressure to get the ball to maybe certain people. You had a receiver room and talking to the guys like Shakir on that team, just about how Khalil Shakir, excuse me, about how it's like they kind of acted as one.
Yeah.
And so it very much felt like this was a group that was going to be able to get them through this season. And so far, with the play of Josh Allen, they have.
Well, there are no tantrums on the sidelines when the ball doesn't come your way, even if you are winning. And they even got Mac Hollins a touchdown. Josh Allen got Mac Hollins a touchdown.
Amari Cooper got Josh Allen a touchdown last night. He lateraled the ball, and Josh Allen got a receiving touchdown for that. So good for him.
Hey, he returned it to Mac Hollins.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. What you got for Mike Ducks?
We
got to
have the conversation, guys. Flag planting in college football. Is it okay or is it not okay? Also, a Georgia DB transferring. We crying fair or foul in this doing this championship week. We'll talk about that on the other side. It's coming up on Mic'd Up. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Guys, I'm struggling this morning. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm struggling to come up with a complete list of all the fights that happened over the weekend. Like, I was sitting here going, okay, let me write these down. And I'll start from the top. I'm like, look, you got to go out there. You had scuffles all over the place. The worst one was Ohio State and Michigan. We talked about that earlier. All right. Penn State, Maryland, where James Franklin and Mike Locksley had the interaction at the end where Mike Locksley didn't like the fact that Penn State was still throwing the ball. James Franklin's like, that's fine, but my threes and fours are in the game. They deserve to play. You had UNC and NC State on the flag incident where the NC, I think it was the UNC player, stole the NC State flag and threw it like a javelin after they tried to plant it. It was absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it was just unbelievable. So,
did you see Mike Norvell?
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to get to that now. The Florida State thing to me was one of the crazier ones of the week. Now, Ohio State, Michigan, definitely, guys, look, it was crazy, right? We're going to talk about pepper spray and everything else going on with that. The Florida and Florida State one, though, was spicy to me because Billy Napier, level-headed guy, you had the Florida State player digging up the logo last year and everything else, but Mike Norvell wasn't happy with the flag planting and everything else that goes on.
Oh, no, Mike Norvell.
Yeah. So I guess it brings me to my point. And there's a number of other ones. Alabama and Auburn got into it at times. There was a melee on the field with them, and there was a situation afterwards where two freshmen start throwing a ball at each other's face. There's an AD. The AD, Alabama's AD, is holding back a freshman DB from getting in a fight. I'm like, that's not a good look.
We even had mascots fighting.
Mascots fighting all over the place. Is it okay to plant a flag at midfield of your rival's field after you beat them in a rivalry game?
I can go first, I guess. I think it's disrespectful, but you also did just beat them. You know, you earned a little bit. I think it can be done. I think you can celebrate in other ways.
Sure.
I go back to the one that I feel like Ohio State and Michigan kicked all this off, and I don't know how teams would know, but I just feel like somebody
traveled.
Yeah, somebody told somebody, hey, you guys, Michigan planted a flag at Ohio State. Yeah, we're gonna do that too, and it just all of a sudden it took off because it felt like almost like Dylan, what's those dances where those people just. It'd be walking in the mall and they'd all of a sudden, was it flash dance or whatever?
Flash mob.
Flash mob. It felt orchestrated, right? All across the country. I go back because everyone was doing it and you didn't see it last year.
I know.
But I go back to something that happened last year when Florida State beat Florida. They ripped up parts of the turf where the F was in the middle of the field.
A little shovel in there.
And they also walked around with a gator head and taunted the fans. So Florida remembered that, and they planted the flag, probably because they knew Ohio State had done it, and that was the easiest way to get that. Hey, and Mike Norvell grabs it. First off, he's rude to Billy Napier, which, you know, that's fine. He just kicked your ass. Maybe you can be. But he was also – but then he grabs the flag from a player and throws it, which was childish for an adult in a leadership role in a university like Florida State to do. I'm sorry. I know it's easy to say because it's the rival, but he looked like a child out there.
So are you okay with them planting the flag? Are you guys okay with guys planting the flag?
I think you should find something else to do. I think it just if it's going to – I don't really think it's as bad. I think all of a sudden, for some reason, they saw – it. Got, word got out, Tiff, that Ohio State fought back, and so everyone was going to fight back.
I don't think you have to do it. I don't think it's necessary. Just celebrate your victory. Shake hands and get off the field because no one's going to let you do it. That's the thing. Like
you hope not.
Like no other team is going to stand for you planting your own school's logo in the middle of their field on top of their giant logo. Like it's just not going to fly. You already know what you're asking for when you go and try to start up that activity.
Well, and that's kind of where I land on it. Like I was upset to see how crazy Ohio State Michigan got. But at the same time, if I'm an Ohio State fan and my players don't react in a bad way to Michigan planting their flag, like I'm not happy with my players either. I'm as a fan or as an alum, I'm looking at it going, come on, man. Like y'all might not show any life during the game, but you at least cannot take the disrespect afterwards. So I'm kind of in between on it. I don't really know how I sit. I'll be curious to see where college football comes down on this and how coaches react in the end. I will say this. At a time where it feels like allegiances are less than they've ever been in college football because of the portal and because how many times guys move around, things were amped up in a way that I did not expect over the weekend.
Speaking of allegiance, nice to see.
No. It's just interesting.
I don't mean in a bad way, but nice to see that someone was loyal to defending their school when you have guys that.
That's what I can't decide. I don't think nice to see is definitely not the way to put it. It was not nice to see. But I think that there is a middle ground where I'm okay with things being amped up on rivalry weekend. It can't get to the all out state of affairs that we saw in like four or five games this weekend. Can't get that far. Rivalry scuffles go back all the way to the beginning of college football. It's just something that's always happened. It just seems like it was at another level this weekend. I bring up the allegiances because I want to talk a little bit just for the next 60 seconds about Julian Humphrey. Julian Humphrey puts out on it. He started 10 games for the Bulldogs this year at corner. He puts out on X over the weekend, hey, I'm entering my name in the transfer portal. Kirby Smart asked about it, and he said, I don't know. I saw the same thing you guys saw. I'm worried about the players that'll be here in 6 days, 5 days, that'll be facing off against Texas. Is it fair or is it foul at this point for Julian Humphrey to come out on Sunday of championship week and say, I'm out of here? I personally understand where he's coming from. I hate the timing. The portal's not open. You're in championship week. It feels like you're taking some of the shine off your teammates because you got benched. But it's a different era. I'm trying not to get caught I'm trying not to get caught in a time and place that might have been significant 15 years ago.
This is college football today. This is what free agency looks like. This is what the transfer portal with the NIL. This is why I think that the transfer portal should not be open until after the college football playoff is ended. And that's the thing for me because, you know, it would cut down on this. Or
tough, too, though, because you're going to get to a point where they can't take classes in the spring if you wait too long.
Or then have it after the spring. Guys leave after spring practice, and that's fine. So I think you've got to figure out how to cut down on this because it takes a system that's already flawed and makes it more flawed.
Yeah.
That's a
level-headed approach to this.
I think, it does distract from championship week. And if this is where the portal is now, this is the timing of it, then maybe.
Well, it's not technically open
right now. But what I'm saying is maybe he's trying to get out front. You want your name already on the list so you can find a place to go.
Because doesn't the portal open after this weekend?
Yeah. I think it opens early next week.
So what, you know, yeah, he's playing in the game or maybe he's not. I don't know.
It sounds to me like he's playing in the game.
Yeah,
I don't think Kirby, that's not the tone I got from Kirby. Like, I know as much as you guys know. So,
But you can't complain for years about wanting these players to have freedom and money and then complain when they take advantage of the system that most of the people that are complaining about it screamed about how it was unfair.
But the problem with what you're saying is that you're talking about a fictional character that's playing both sides. There's a group of people that wanted this, and there's a group of people that didn't. There's a group of people that think it's okay, and there's a group of people that don't.
Well,
two different groups of people.
Sometimes the people that – a lot of people talk out of both sides of their mouth, and more than not, especially about issues like this. And those are the people I'm talking about. They know who they are.
All right, you can weigh in by giving us a shout on the wake-up call, 404-726-0929. Your thoughts on Georgia Dog hitting the transfer portal during championship week, or let us know your thoughts on what the Falcons need to do to get back on track. Wake-up call's next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start pecking. It is time for the wake-up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. Again, you can weigh in on a Georgia Bulldog hitting the transfer portal during championship week. So your thoughts on that, or let us know what you think the Falcons need to do to get back on the winning track. Again, this is the wake-up call. That's what it's for, so give us a shout.
Yeah, I want to start first. I got a wake-up call, and, you know, it sucks that you have to talk about this. It's not, you know, in a similar vein of the flag planting where teams are fighting, but yesterday a fight broke out in the Jaguars-Texans game after Trevor Lawrence goes to slide and Azeez Al-Shaair decides he's going to, as Lawrence is clearly sliding, he's going to go after his head with two forearm shivers, I guess you could call them, to Lawrence's head, which knocks him out. And they, because of the way some of the, I think some of those the concussion doctors said it was one of those, kind of like what Tua had, the traumatic brain injury, because of the way your arms flail, right, Tiff?
The fencing position.
Okay. And it's dirty, and it doesn't belong. And look, he was ejected, I think rightfully so. I'm not going to sit here and go on some rant about how he should never play again because that is ridiculous. But he's a repeat offender. This is also a guy that put his hand around Tom Brady's throat in a game years past, a few years ago. When you have repeat offenders and you go headhunting when a guy is slight, to me there's a difference in headhunting when a guy comes across the middle and when a player is sliding, quarterback or not, and the direct, we can't get up in arms about Tua and how he should retire and how he should take care of himself, and then not be up in arms when blatant disrespect for other players' safety is shown, like Al-Shaair did in Sunday's game.
And I did play this back several times to try to see if it was like a bang bang kind of thing, and I'm leaning towards no. I think it was a pretty dirty hit. Also, Trevor Lawrence did go home and put out a statement on X saying that he was feeling better, that he is at home, and he thanked everybody for reaching out for their support.
There's two angles, Tiff. I did too. I watched the first angle that was shown, and I can't remember who tweeted it. It's the sideline angle, right?
Right.
And it looks somewhat bang bang. There's an end zone view. Thank you. Behind where Lawrence is running, and that is the one that is clear that this was a decision made that I'm gonna knock his ass out, and he did. And it doesn't belong. We can't, all the things are in the game these days. I just think there's a complete difference in that. And, you know, when a guy comes across the middle and lighten him up and he's on his feet, but, you know, I'm interested in maybe some other people in our wake-up calls maybe have something to say about that along with whatever we can fix the Falcons or Kirk Cousins.
Or if you have thoughts on flag planting. Let's go to Sarah on the line in Cleveland, Georgia. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Morning, Sarah.
Good, and you?
I'm doing good. It's actually my birthday. I took my mother to the game yesterday to celebrate my birthday, and Kirk gave me a good present.
Happy birthday. Oh, happy birthday, though.
Sarah, did he throw you a ball, too?
Hey, man, I think I was too far in the stand, so he didn't look at me for 10 seconds straight to throw it there. So.
Well, happy belated birthday.
Oh, man. Yeah, happy birthday. Sheesh.
You know, but Kirk is not really who I want to talk about on the Falcons this morning. I'm also a Florida Gators fan. And if Kyle Pitts don't block somebody, you guys, when his players are running behind him, right in front of my seats, man, we would have had a touchdown. If Kyle Pitts would just block somebody.
Yeah. You know what's funny about that? Thanks for the call, and I think you make a good point. Kyle Pitts has been non-existent for the last month for the Atlanta Falcons, it feels like. But there's a thing where sometimes it's like when guys don't play extremely hard on every play, sometimes you're like, oh, well, you know, I can't blame him for not getting a block there. But if he had played hard from the beginning, and I'm not talking about that specific play for Kyle Pitts, and I know what she's talking about. She's talking about the Ray McLeod, 60-yard catch. But if you play hard from the beginning and get some of those guys early, it might be a completely different situation. And so Ray gets knocked out at the 10, and you're like, all right, good, we're set up inside the red zone. But if he gets the end zone, then we're talking about a completely different conversation this morning.
Yeah, and save your tweets and your texts and your calls about how the Falcons don't use Kyle Pitts right. You can save it. Because there's no such thing. If he's a unicorn, if he's an elite player, if he's a difference maker, they shouldn't have to scheme a way to use him, okay? You don't get to pick who covers you. Your job is to beat it. And there's plenty of times where there are guys on him that he can beat and he doesn't, whether it's he's good enough, whether it's want to. Honestly, I'm over talking about that too. Stop with it's everyone else's fault but the players. Sometimes it is the players' fault. You know, there's another guy on this team that's not necessarily playing up to the ability we've seen of him in the past, and you're going to tell me it's everyone else's fault too? No. That guy's on defense, by the way.
Ding.
Back to the lines we go. Let's say good morning to Chase and Jefferson. Good morning, Chase.
What up, Chase?
Hey, good morning, guys. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. So, to be honest with you, not to sound insensitive, but, you know, with the Marlon Humphreys, you know, I've called him number 12 for Georgia, you know, when I'm talking to all my buddies in the Georgia game. We've all been saying since week one, you know, texting during the game, man, this number 12 sucks. This guy's not any good. So, to be honest with you, the fact that he's entering the portal, I mean, in my humble opinion, it's not really news. I mean, I hope he goes somewhere and finds success. But as a Georgia fan, I don't really think we're any worse off. But on the Falcons, man, so deep down, I started Kirk Cousins in my fantasy league. So, selfishly, it hurt twice over, so he's probably going to cost me the number one seed in the playoffs. But hey, it's not about me. I don't want you guys to go crazy. You know, sometimes I can be a little negative because the Falcons have hurt me so many times. But it's like, man, I'm at a point where maybe it's time to rip it down to the studs. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, Troy Anderson. You know, I'm watching the Kobe Dean kill it, and you know, I know we missed on Jamar Chase, and I know you can't really look at all the people we haven't drafted, but when you look at the people we have drafted in the top 10, it's like, man, they're not helping us win games; they're helping us lose games. So, anyway, good talking with you guys. Love the show. Take care.
Thanks, Chase.
Appreciate the call.
Ripping it out of the studs is no.
You just did that. This is supposed to be the product.
We can't talk about Troy Anderson after the way the defense played yesterday.
Yeah.
That's a complete non-topic right now.
Also, N'Kobe Dean, what you're asking in this defense for your linebackers, I'm not sure N'Kobe Dean quite fits that.
All right, back to the lines we go. We got Haitian Dave in Cobb County. Good morning.
Whamp, whamp, whamp,
Mafia in the building.
Attaboy, Dave. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Let's get it. Good to hear from you too, brother. How you feeling, man?
Hey, man, living the dream.
There you go. Keep living, brother. Keep living. Hey, Bo, you were spot on, brother. I loved it. I loved it. Your take about Aziz, spot on, bro. Like,
Appreciate that.
A dirty play. We don't need him here. That was trash. That was horrible. As far as old what a name, we're gonna call him old what a name from Georgia. Kirby, let him go. Who cares? My boy Dylan said it this morning. Georgia showed us that they still have championship pedigree. They're still championship ballers on that squad.
Yeah.
Let's go, dog.
Yeah.
Kirk O'Dangs. Dang, man.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You got to be able to move in this league if you're a quarterback. There's no, I ain't going to say there's no such thing as a pocket quarterback anymore, but you got to have some scramble, whatever the word is. You got to be able to scramble them eggs, bro. You got to get move your feet. You know what I'm saying? If he could have just ran it, checked it down to Bijan. Bijan was dead in front of him, let Bijan make magic. But instead, you float it up into the back of the end zone where there's a sea of white jerseys. Come on, dog. You got to be better.
Great Mike call.
Mafia, we out of here.
Great call, Dave. I will say this. We talked about Julian Humphrey has started 10 games. Well, it's a reason it's not more than that because he has essentially been kind of taken out of that lineup the last 2 weeks for Daniel Harris. So to your point about the actual game this weekend, it little to no effect, I don't think, for most Georgia fans. So,
yeah, and he had teammates defending him last night. I think it was Branson Robinson, I think. Is that the running back? There's Roderick, too. I can't remember if it was Roderick or Branson, but one of them went on defending him, and I rightfully so. You know, look, his decision is his decision. Whether we like it or not, there's no reason to take shots at him online and stuff.
There's a lot of gray area to all these things. There's caveats. Like, you can hate you can be okay with the fact that he transferred and hate the timing of it.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Like, I agree.
There's a lot of caveats to it, and that's the reason we had it in wake-up call, man. It's good stuff.
Up next, what happened with the Falcons in that loss to the Chargers? We've got the former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, joining us here on the Morning Shift. We'll be right back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer, joining us here on the show. Good morning, Dave. How you feeling?
I'm doing good. How y'all doing?
Good, buddy. How about them Cyclones?
Yeah, how about that, man? How about that little championship game action, huh? Maybe play yourself into the playoff.
Did I see that right, Dave? This is the first 10-win season in program history. Is that right or no?
That is correct, yes. Wow. They have not been able to get to double digits. And, Matt Campbell's done an amazing job there, as you know, recruiting to a little country town, corn-fed town there in the middle of Iowa that they're not pulling 4- and 5-star kids in. But he's done a great job developing the program. And this is their second time in the Big 12 title game in the last 5 years. I think the only other team that's been in the Big 12 title game twice in the last 5 years, Oklahoma State. So doing some good stuff up there, man.
Yeah, there's a new sheriff in the post-Texas-Oklahoma Big 12, and it might be a Cyclone. All right.
Either that or a Sun Devil, one of the two.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Their mascot keeps getting in brawls. They might not make it very far. All right. We can get to that because I know you did do Alabama Auburn over the weekend and then the Iron Bowl. We can get to the fight stuff in a minute, but we got to hit it hard now. Kirk Cousins, what'd you see from him, Arch, in a 4-interception performance? Was there anything that you saw during the game that stood out?
Well, there's a lot of things that Kirk struggled with for some reason yesterday. I mean, he's been really good this year. He's done a lot of good things for his team. I think Raheem's talked about that, but I thought he had some problems decision-making-wise. Early on, I thought he missed a couple of throws. He had Darnell Mooney on the opening drive. Darnell slipped into that second level behind the linebackers, and he had an opportunity to stick one in there to him, kind of got a little bit antsy, maybe anticipated the throw and then had to kind of reload it and then threw it again. It was short, and Mooney couldn't come up with it down about the 2-yard line, which probably would have given you an opportunity to punch it in there. He missed, I believe, Mooney again on a little play where Mooney read the route perfectly, sat down in the hole. And, again, it was one of those – you kind of felt like he felt guys around his arm. I've been in that position before where the pocket's crushing down around you, and you almost feel like you're trying to throw it in a closet, and so you change your arm angle a little bit. You don't get a lot on it. He short-hopped that one into Mooney. And then, of course, the interceptions. He misread the pit six is one where they had shown a zero look where they were going to come after him. They did the first time. The second time they dropped off in zone coverage, he did not see the flat defender. Threw it out there. And ironically enough, I was watching the game last night with Tampa and Carolina, hoping Carolina was going to do us a solid. They almost did. But Baker Mayfield goes out on a play where he gets his ankle twisted and comes back in. In his very first play, he throws a pick, and it's a very similar misread where he didn't read the cloud corner. Corner rolled up in the flat. He thought he was running out of there in man coverage, and he threw a pick. And as it turns out, they were able to tackle the Carolina defender, and he didn't score, but we didn't get that done. It was taken all the way back for a touchdown. The most disturbing one was probably when he got up in the pocket. We're down in scoring territory. You can't take three off the board, potential three off the board, let's put it that way. And he throws kind of a jump ball type situation in the end zone. And, Drake London's there kind of in the area, but it looked like it was kind of to Mooney, and Mooney's not really going to win one of those battles, and it ends up being an interception in the back of the end zone. That one got you a little bit. The last interception, he's trying to push it up the field because it's fourth down. He's just trying to get us in field goal range, and so you got to take a shot at that point. And Derwin James picks the last one off. So there's the kind of the interception deal. I just thought his decision making wasn't nearly on par for where he normally is. And he said it in the interview with me. He's gonna have to go back and do a little soul searching and stuff and get back to making those good decisions as a quarterback.
Yeah, well, what does that look like, Arch? Because to me, I had a couple reactions to this game yesterday. First and foremost, it looked to me like he's gone back and watched the film. He's taken two or more sacks in five straight games. He's watching the film going, I got to get the ball out. And especially when you look over on the other side of the ball, you see Khalil Mack, you see Joey Bosa, you're like, I got to get it out. But also, we've kind of clamored for more play action. You heard Raheem Morris talk about it last week. Got to run more play action. The second play action pass of the game, he throws a pick. And I think that when you have play action, you know this better than anybody, you turn your eyes away from the defense. They can, you know, kind of change and disguise coverage. How much of what they were doing coverage-wise do you think that Kirk Cousins was absolutely confused by? Because he looked uncomfortable. But I'm just curious how much he was actually confused, or how much of it was, kind of just knowing that pass rush would get there eventually.
Well, I think it's always a combination of what you just described, Mike. But I think there was some moments there where the Chargers did a really good job in the back end of muddying the water before the snap. You try to get a pre-snap look, and it's usually when you drop to throw and don't turn your eyes away from the line of scrimmage, you confirm it in your first step or two of what you thought you saw pre-snap. That doesn't really happen in play action. As you described really accurately in the pregame show, or the postgame show last night, I was driving home listening to you. When you turn your back to the line of scrimmage to play action fake, you've got to be able to have time to confirm what you thought you saw pre-snap, and so that's going to make you hold the ball longer. Usually, play action protection is your best protection because you got more guys involved in protection. Your back's going to slide up, chip somebody, pick somebody up. Usually your tight end's check releasing. And it's usually a two-man route, three-man route. So the protection's better because you got more people. That means you can hold the ball longer. And Kirk just didn't recognize after he came out of the play fake what they were doing. And obviously it resulted in an interception. I thought we did there was a couple of times poor job in play action where you didn't check out of the backfield. I thought that Tyler Algier got hung up a couple of times, and you know, you understand it because the two guys you mentioned, Bosa and Mack, are two guys that have a reputation for getting after you, and they were certainly doing a decent job, but I don't remember mentioning their name very much, Mike, last night. I know that they were around and certainly were collapsing the pocket, but I don't remember mentioning their name making any plays. And so maybe you gave them a little bit too much respect, one with guys trying to check out or help block them and check out, but you didn't get your check downs out a couple of times. And so Kirk was in a position where he was, panicked a little bit, I guess, and tried to force the ball up the field. And like you're saying, he wants to get the ball out. You want something positive happening, but number one in your mind as a quarterback is protection of the football. And he didn't get that done yesterday.
We've got Dave Archer on the line with us, former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst for the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network. Dave, this defense came into this game with the NFL low, 10 sacks, and then they get five on Justin Herbert in this matchup. What did you make of the way that this defense came out and played, especially coming out of the bye week?
Well, certainly, Tiff, they were very much renewed. This is something we talked about throughout the week, that we felt like this was going to be a refreshed group. I thought they looked really tired and beat up against Denver, especially the two linebackers. Ellis and Lamon have played so much with the injuries, JT Bertrand and Troy Anderson, that they've got a lot of snaps under their belt. There's like a running back that's carried the ball 400 or 500 times. I mean, they just were beat down and worn down. I thought that the time off really rejuvenated them. Plus, you got Troy Anderson back, which helped them rotate another player in there. And so I thought they looked really well. I thought the defensive front was really active. There was a lot of stunts and things. And Mike, you talked about this in the postgame. I thought their self-scout, they got to some stuff defensively. Maybe they weren't doing very much of. I thought the stunt game was phenomenal between the front four and rushing the passer. And you knew going in that Justin Herbert was one of those kind of quarterbacks that hangs onto the ball. He's not a guy that gets the ball out really quick. He's going to try to wait to the last minute. It's kind of like Ben Roethlisberger used to be. You know how Ben standing there, and then he'd shrug guys off and he'd wait. And that's what Herbert does. And so because of the way he plays, and maybe and a good deal of it probably to the staff, giving Jimmy Lake and his staff credit on the defensive side for getting some stunts in to get guys home. Ebby Cady was excellent. Obviously, Grady Jarrett was outstanding. We had Kentavious Street was in there. So there was a number of guys, just one guy doing it. And so I thought it was just a renewed effort on the other side of the ball, on the defensive side. And I feel bad for them because this was a championship performance, really. You know, you have 189 yards in total offense to an offense. That's a game you should walk away and win easily. They had the ball for, I don't know, 12 more minutes in the game. They limited them to like 3 conversions on third down. Just a phenomenal performance. The only thing they didn't take it away multiple times, but they did get one takeaway, which provided a short field opportunity that netted a touchdown. This was a winning performance defensively, no question.
Arch, real quick, does college football have a problem with flag planting at midfield?
Arch would have been the one planting the flag. What are you talking about?
Well, you know, there's a lot of levels of stuff that this is going to have to go through. I know Kirk Herbstreit said some stuff about it. And, you know, this is an administrative deal where you're going to have to talk to your coaches and your players about, you know, wrangling it in. Individual institutions are going to have to wrangle this thing in. There's always – Mike and I both played in games like these ones we had this weekend where the temperatures run a little hotter because there is crosstown stuff or there is guys you played against in high school and there is that rivalry thing going on. But it is supposed to be, you know, college football, and there's a decorum that certainly has to fit it to a certain extent. You want it's funny, Mike, we talked about this a little bit. I think that you want the fever pitch, but you don't want it to spill over. And it got sideways on Saturday, no question about it. So it's going to have to be addressed. Each institution is going to have to address it. Each of the commissioners and each conference is going to have to address it. And then, you know, all the coaches are going to have to talk to the players about this. And the coaches, to a certain extent, were part of the problem. And so that's something they're going to have to wrangle in as well. But you can't have multiple fights because there were fights all over the country. I was at Auburn, Alabama. We had one get sideways. It was kind of a benign play, but an Alabama guy loses his mind because he's getting blocked, and the wide receiver blocked him effectively, and then it got out of bounds, and then it was on Auburn's sideline, and here comes Alabama's sideline, and so you just can't have that. So that's the way, the only way you're going to – or you're going to have to throw guys out of the game. This multiple unsportsmanlike conduct penalty is not working. Okay, if you get a guy that gets in a fight and they start tearing people's helmets off and punching, you got to throw them out of the game. And that will deter people as well. But you got to get the thing under control, no question.
Arch, did they treat you well over in Tuscaloosa, man, or do I need to make a phone call to somebody? They probably treated you better than they do me over there, honestly.
No. I was asked when I got in the building, do you know Mike Johnson? Yeah. So that was how I got in.
Oh, you do know Mike? Get out now.
Well, I had to give a background on you where you played every position along the offensive line. I had to tell them about All American and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, I barely got in. But you were the key turner that got me in, my man.
Yeah, I'm sure, buddy. Good stuff.
Dave, as always, appreciate you joining us here on the Morning Shift.
Thanks, guys. See y'all.
That was Dave Archer, former Atlanta Falcons QB and analyst on the Atlanta Falcons Radio Network, joining us here. You can follow him on X at ArcherQB. Or Archer 16QB, did I get that right?
Yeah, QB, QB.
It's on the printout.
Archer QB
Dave,
16.
Archer QB 16. Hope you hung out, Dave.
Yeah. I almost gave his email address out because there's numbers and letters in that too. And I was like, whoa, wait, no, it's Archer QB 16.
All right, we'll be right back here at the Life of Squid on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're back here on the Morning Shift going straight to the WadeFord.com hotline. That is where we find Dr. Travell Ellis. We're happy to have you with us this morning. We know that this is a big initiative between Cologuard, the Atlanta Falcons, and Exact Sciences as we try to get encourage people to get screened, people 45 and over to get screened for colorectal cancer. How important is this, doctor?
Yeah, so colorectal cancer is actually the number 2 cancer killer, and over 50,000 people will lose their lives to a disease that's preventable. We can catch this cancer before it ever wreaks havoc on your body. It's the one cancer you don't have to get. but you got to get people screened.
Dr. Ellis, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I was going to say, just how did this come about? How did this initiative come about with the Atlanta Falcons? I know you got Little John partnered in there. It's a pretty cool deal.
Little John's a local guy, a local artist with a passion for his hometown and wanted to do something to give back and spread awareness. Just really great guy. And we were just fortunate to be with great partners. Colorectal cancer is a little scary. And so the Falcons fans are amazing, and the energy in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium was on fire yesterday. And so just thinking about Get Low, this idea of getting screened, it doesn't have to be scary, an amazing artist like Lil Jon, all of these things come together with a great product like Cologuard. We really want people to feel like they could be part of their health and that it doesn't have to be scary or intimidating to take charge of it.
Dr. Ellis, also the importance of just Cologuard being an easy-to-use colon cancer screening test. How can people go about accessing this?
Yeah, so one, you can get a prescription from your doctor, or someone could request the test online at cologuard.com or getlow2.com. The test comes straight to someone's home, and you don't have to do the prep, the gallon jug of disgusting liquid, right? You could just have a regular normal bowel movement like you would on a regular day. You collect the sample, you swipe the sample, you package it up, everything you need is in the box. You don't have to touch your poop. And you send it back through UPS to Cologuard, and we give you your result in about 2 weeks. So it takes about 15 minutes, but it's really straightforward. There's online videos and QR codes and a hotline if you need help. So it's really meant to be simple and not scary and really approachable.
Dr. Ellis, I'm reading the notes here for you guys at getlow2.com. It says there's a full music video. What can people expect
to get to
that website? How rowdy am I going to get watching this music video?
It's amazing. I watched it this morning. So everybody remember From the Windows to the Walls from the 2000s, late 99.
Yes,
It's time to get screened, right? And so, 45 and up, go to the website, check out the video. It's Lil Jon and Comfort is at his home. He talks to his doctor about it. And he gives you 4 steps, sit, screen, chip, or box, and then chip. And so it's quite funny. It's time to drop it down, get low, all the things. So I'm going to let you guys go to getlow2.com and check it out.
All right, well, you heard Dr. Ellis. So if you were getting low to that song, it is time for you to get screened for colon cancer. So
awesome,
we appreciate
stuff.
You sharing that insight with us and for getting this initiative going because it's so important. And again, like you said, it's preventable.
Good stuff.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it.
All right. Super informative. Again, I know you're laughing about poop, Bo, but this is a serious
it's very serious.
And so it is good.
The things like that are what make you remember the name of the website and that it's important to get this done.
It's a phenomenal way to do it in a way that you remember. We were looking over, to be honest, the reason I got cracked up is we were looking over a way, like the screening thing and the process and about the at-home sample.
It's an at-home process. Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder how that works. And she described it, and just the way she described it, it's made me laugh because we had talked about it. But I'm also a 12-year-old in a 41-year-old's body, so.
You mean you're from Paulding County and you ain't never pooped in a box?
They do that in Paulding County?
I've wiped with a tank top before. Does that count?
In the woods is one thing. In a box is a little bit shady.
In a box, not in an outhouse. We dig holes out there. And you go in them and then you cover them up. You know,
one of those seats that hooks onto your to your bumper on your truck.
Kind of like when a dog takes a poop and they start kicking the grass afterwards. They're really just covering it up. Big shout out to my friends at New Realm Brewing. Abe and I did a show down there. Where I had a couple of Allen lagers on Friday before Georgia Tech, and not to mention Elvin Engineer is another beer down there that they have, which is Georgia Tech beer. Also, Saturday we're at Miller Ale House in Kennesaw for the Kennesaw State game. I was out there. Tinker stopped by. Big shout out to Mike who stopped by and brought me some Earnhardt stuff, which was really cool, some cool collectible stuff. But so it was a fun weekend. Real quick, I wanted to say that yesterday, you know, we talked about when Kennesaw State had fired Brian Bohannon a few weeks ago. Well, now they have hired the replacement. His name is Jerry Mack, and he's got 20 years of experience in been a part of five conference championships. So he's come to them. I believe he was most recently, if I read the report right, in Jacksonville as their running backs coach down there. He spent time with the University of Tennessee as well. And so he'll be coming to take over. So hopefully Milton Overton and company have found their guy to lead this program into the next era of it, which is obviously D1, Conference USA. So congratulations to Coach Mack. I'll expect my name to be put on a box at the stadium, and you have me in there.
I wasn't going to go there with you, but I was going to say, what kind of offense are we running here, you think? You know, what are we doing? We spreading it out or what?
I can tell you, if you hire a running backs coach, I'd imagine that they're definitely going to run the ball. I'm not sure if it'll be the Brian Bohannon, Paul Johnson kind of style of offense, but I imagine they will, you know, kind of be – I don't know. I would kind of look at
single wing. Come on, baby.
No. I think you're going to look at more modern offense. I think something kind of like what Brent Key and Georgia Tech have transitioned to.
Yeah, all right. I like that.
Cool. Well, that's it for us here. And it's actually not it for us here. We will be back to tell you what's coming up on the Steakhouse. Stay with us here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.